We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 12, Beyond Renunciation and Knowledge, verses 1 to 13. Verses 1 and 2. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Narodayati Mam Yogo Nisankyan Tarmayivacha Asadhya Yastapasthyago Nishta Putana Dakshina Vritani Yagyas Chandansi Titani Niyama Yamaha Atavarante Satsanga Sarvasanga Pahopimam. Himam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, "My dear Uddhava, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachment for all objects of material sense gratification. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee. One may perform Ashtanga Yoga system, engage in philosophical analysis of the elements of material nature, practice nonviolence and other ordinary principles of piety, chant the Vedas, perform penances, take to the renounced order of life, execute sacrificial performances and dig wells, plant trees and perform other public welfare activities, give in charity, carry out severe vows, worship the demigods, chant confidential mantras, visit holy places, or accept major and minor disciplinary injunctions. But even by performing such activities, one does not bring me under his control. Mukam karati vachanam bhangalam kayate girin yakipam tamam vande shigurin vinacharinam om jnana timaranasya jnanam sharasharakaya shakshamiritam yena jasme shigurin. So let us review the ninth chapter, gurus, 24 gurus. What did you learn from the hawk? Yes,
detachment.
Right, and from the child. Yes,
free from false ego, pride, and careless.
Free from false ego, pride, and cares. From the young girl.
Don't wag your tongue.
Don't wag your tongue. From the arrow maker. Yes, Prabhu Jagaguru. Fixed concentration, absorption. From the snake. What did we learn? Yes? Keep away from the materialists. Use the achievements of materialists in service of Krishna. I have a nice quote from Prabhupada that it is from a lecture. Oh, yeah. It's a room conversation in Mauritius that a brahmana does not go to construct big, big house. He simply constructs his character. And the others, the kshatriyas and vaishyas, they offer, please come here and sit down. And so I thought that was quite nice, that the brahmana constructs his character, and the others, they construct a house for him. They come in. From a rude conversation in Mauritius, 1975, by Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada, he talked about the snake, Ajagara Vritti. He says, this: the snake makes a hole in the field, he enters the hole, a mouse makes a hole, the snake enters, he eats the mouse, and he lives in his house. Zaurabhad said that the snake eats the mouse and lives peacefully. So he said, so let these rascals manufacture cars, and when we need, we take from them and ride away. And then he talked about the people in the neighborhood of Los Angeles. They don't understand how we can live so nicely. The shopkeepers, you don't work, you live so comfortably, and we work hard, and we cannot live like you. And Prabhupada said, yes. So if we ask them, you come and join us, no, we will not. We will work hard. He says, that they won't do. That is too difficult to chant Hare Krishna. Okay. So then we have the spider. Yes.
Creation,
maintenance, destruction of the Lord. And also there's another comment by Satyaraj on this snake. Not that devotees should avoid responsibility by exploiting someone else's house for their own sense gratification. So there's the other side. We don't just take advantage of people. But they should not be distracted by such mundane considerations. Ordinary people should help them by giving them facility, which in turn allows them to focus on the Supreme. Okay, so he had an interesting comment on the spider also. And he's saying that this spider shows knowledge of the Lord's creation, but there's two things actually happening. He said there's the spiritual world where the Lord and his devotees are exchanging rasa. But with a spider example, like he's all alone doing everything. He's making, if the web is coming out and it's going back in, and he's alone. So he said, so how is this? He said, so how is he alone? So Satyaraj said there's two considerations. There's rasa and there's siddhanta or tattva. So rasa is from the perspective he's seen as a reservoir of all pleasure, and siddhanta is the absolute truth, the reality that he's alone and from him everything comes. So there's two ways of seeing, because you might be confused. Well, okay, well, how is he alone? He's with his devotees. But he says there's two perspectives of seeing the Lord. Okay, so then the insect trapped by the wasp. Yes? Yes, if you meditate on a certain body, then you'll get that body in your next life if you're so absorbed. And what do we learn from the body? Yes?
Detachment.
Yes. And you should live on the bare necessities, just like your senses are like a man with many wives. So each one is pulling a different direction. Now in 31, what is 31? I had something here. Oh yeah. That's the end. 31. That's, okay, from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. I had something. What do we learn from the dog?
Determination.
Determination this dog has. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has an interesting comment. I've learned to become detached from 8 spiritual masters: the pigeon, fish, deer, young girl, elephant, snake, moth, and Karara bird. I have learned both renunciation of the temporary and acceptance of the eternal from 3 spiritual masters: the honeybee, honey thief, and pingala. I have learned how to cultivate interest in the Supreme Lord from the other spiritual masters, beginning with the earth. Acceptance of many instructing spiritual masters often helps to strengthen one's conviction. So that was Vishnu's comment, which was quite... So that's putting in perspective how you can have many spiritual masters. So now, what do you remember from chapter 10, which is about Varnashram and karma and all kind of things? And that topic. Anything? Yes? Okay. Okay, result if you follow karma kanda will be jnana. It leads you to detachment. Oh, they follow with attachment, but the prescription is to be with detachment. What else do you remember? Yes? Okay, they need to perform bhakti, even if they're trying for the result of Brahman realization. Without bhakti, you cannot get anything else? Yes?
In other words,
dies and suffers in hellish life.
One should not repeat the mistake of becoming a mansaka, so say just do karma and it will be.
Yes, don't just do karma, because the end is the same, actually.
It's like giving a sweet to the person before execution.
If giving a sweet to the person before execution. Yes? Yeah. And heavenly planets is just like here. All the things are going on. Envy and jealousy. Okay, so I have a few comments to read from Satyaraj in chapter 4. In the fourth, chapter 10, verse 4. The verse, Krishna says, one who has fixed his mind as the goal, me within his mind is the goal of life, should give up activities based on sense gratification and instead execute work governed by regulative principles for advancement. When, however, one is fully engaged in searching out the ultimate truth of the soul, one should not accept the scriptural injunctions governing fruitive activities. So this is talking about two levels of people. There's one who are not so advanced and one who's advanced. And Satyaraj again makes an interesting comment that, you know, sometimes charlatans have a tendency to abuse such verses, using them to rationalize their illicit behavior. I don't have to follow the rules and regulations because I'm advanced. So when one is a beginner, he has to carefully follow all the rules. And as you make advancement, he need not bother with all the details. He's a seasoned practitioner is more concerned with the essence of the principles and not the details, which can vary according to time, place, and circumstance. So I thought that was a nice comment. And then on verse 7, he commented also. That verse is, one should see one's real self-interest in life in all circumstances and should therefore remain detached from wife, children, home, land, relatives, friend, wealth, and so on. So again, he makes a comment that what is the detachment for family? It's not that you neglect them, but you see them as belonging to Krishna, and you don't have the mentality that these are mine, that these are my relatives, that they are Krishna's. So then in verse 13, about Guru, this also, by submissively hearing from an expert spiritual master, the expert disciple develops pure knowledge which repels the onslaught of material illusion arising from the three modes of material nature. Finally, this pure knowledge itself ceases, just as fire ceases when the stock of fuel has been consumed. So that's interesting. You hear from the guru, you get knowledge, you get free from the three modes. This is verse 13 of chapter 10. 10:13. Yeah. So you worship the guru, you get knowledge, free from the modes, then the knowledge itself ceases. So what does this mean? He says that knowledge burns away illusion and leaves us in the cool waters of spiritual awareness. And once in these waters, the existence of knowledge is no longer important. At that point, one basks in love of God, with knowledge serving as little more than a pious distraction. So that's very similar to a verse in chapter 11, which we'll read after. But until before that, I'd like to ask you, what do you remember from chapter 11? That's the difference between conditioned, liberated souls. Oh, 26 qualities of a devotee. Wonderful. Krishna Ikasharan. Okay, anything else from chapter 11, Conditioned and Liberated Souls? Yes?
The soul is not bound, actually, and cannot be liberated.
He's not bound or liberated.
From the highest point of view.
From the highest point of view, yes. Yes?
When someone is under the three modes of material nature, one is considered bound, one is engaged in the three modes of material service, one is considered liberated.
Okay, under the modes you're bound and engaging the modes you're liberated. Parvati?
Excuse me, but my hearing isn't so good today, but from this chapter I understood that the soul is neither bound nor liberated.
Right.
It's only the bodily perception.
It's the bodily perception. We're not actually bound or liberated. Isn't that good news? We're not bound. Just wake up and see. We are not bound. Okay? What else from chapter 11? Yes? Highest aim of knowledge is to get bhakti. Okay? And there's a really wonderful verse which is going to lead into chapter 12, verse 33. And this is describing who we're going to hear about today. Verse 33 of chapter 11. My devotees may or may not know exactly what I am, who I am, and how I exist. But if they worship me with unalloyed love, then I consider them to be the best of devotees. So these were the gopis who we're going to hear about today in chapter 12.
Verse 35.
33. Now here's a very nice comment again by Satyaraj on this point, and he brings it in a very practical application to our preaching. He says, spirituality begins with concern for morals and ethics and for obeying God's laws. At this point, God's divinity is important and one worships him with awe and reverence. As one's realization increases, a feeling of oneness develops, unity of interest. Then we start to love him for who he is, and his divinity recedes into the background. So at first it's awe and reverence, and then you start just loving Krishna. Now, then he takes another point of view on this verse. This verse also might be understood as saying that anyone from any religion of the world who has developed love for God are considered the greatest of devotees. So whatever religion you're following, if you're developing love of God, then Prabhupada also said that too, then you're the best devotee. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says when he enters a temple, a mosque, or a church, he does not focus on the differences. He simply appreciates whether or not his Lord is being nicely worshipped there. So that's what he said. When I go into a church, I just see how are they worshipping my Lord. He doesn't see the differences. All established religions can produce pure devotees. Krishna sees their love and not the path that brought them there. And so this is a very nice point for us to remember as preachers. Well, it sounds like a very... a story we've heard many times.
Yeah. I've only heard the story before, but I can't remember
who is that. I mean, from Bhagavatam and all of I don't know. I can't help you with that. Yeah. But, I mean, sometimes it happens. It happened to Narada Muni. Yeah. But I don't know who else. Okay, I'm going to read, you know, this verse 49. Now, this also leads into chapter 12. My dear Uddhava, O beloved of the Yadu dynasty, because you are my servant, well-wisher, and friend, I shall now speak to you the most confidential knowledge. Please hear as I explain these great mysteries to you. So in the end of that purport, it says, one must only learn how to associate with pure devotees, and one's life will be perfect. That is the sum and substance of this chapter. So association with devotees, according to the commentator, is the sum and substance of chapter 11. And there is a nice quote from Bihar Bhagavatamrita, and it describes the gopis. So this verse is quoted, this 49th verse about the most confidential knowledge. And this is like a little, this verse here in Bihar Bhagavatamrita is like a little introduction to what we're going to hear. And also, four of the verses from our 12th chapter are going to be quoted in this and commented on in Brihad Bhagavatamrita also. So before we read the 12th chapter, there's another verse here that's quoted from, this is from 10:47:58. Among all persons on earth, these coward women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. Their pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahmin or even as Lord Brahma himself? So this is spoken by Uddhava when he visited Vrindavan. This is Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Part 2, Chapter 7, Verse 147, but Volume 3. It's Volume 3 of the books. So here it talks about Uddhava, that he was an exalted Vaishnava, and he says the gopis' love is supreme. And he's a favorite student of Brihaspati and trusted advisor to Krishna. So here it says that when he met with the gopis in Vrindavan, he used all his diplomatic skill to deliver Krishna's message in a way that would relieve the agony the gopis felt in separation. But after hearing the message, the gopis became even more astonished, more deeply immersed in the ocean of their distress. So Uddhava was very astonished, and he's saying that the gopis are greater than those who want liberation, greater than self-realized liberated saints, and greater than all other devotees. because only they have realized the full potential of human life. So we're going to hear about them now in this chapter 12. And the first thing Lord Krishna says is that by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachment for all objects of material sense gratification. This is verses 1 and 2. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee. And then he lists all the other things that people do, but they cannot control Krishna. Only by loving Krishna can you control Krishna, and by associating with devotees who have that love. Krishna says, then you can bring me under control. So Krishna, in the 10th canto, Krishna was with us, and in 11th canto, he's about to leave. In 10th canto, he left Vrindavan, and now he's about to leave Dwarka. He will leave, but before he's leaving, he's speaking Uddhava Gita. Because after he's not physically present, he wants to show us how we can see him, even now. So this is the purpose of the Uddhava Gita, and the gopis are the most expert in this type of meditation. So we're going to hear about these topmost devotees in chapter 12 and about their meditation. So we'll go to the purport of this verses 1 and 2, paragraph 2, near the end. In other words, such practices of sacrifice, austerity, and philosophical study may help one become fit for rendering devotional service. And when such activities are performed by devotees aspiring for spiritual advancement, they become somewhat pleasing to the Lord. And so if you're a devotee doing these things, then it gives some pleasure to Krishna. If you're not a devotee, then it's not so pleasing. Then at the end of paragraph 3, it may be concluded that such secondary principles are essential for advancement in Krishna consciousness, and therefore one should never give up the principle of vrata, the execution of prescribed vows. So this prescribed vow especially is ekadashi vrata, that you should not give up. In the last paragraph it says, if one falsely thinks one may obtain the association of Lord Krishna merely by great austerities, brilliant studies in Sanskrit literature, magnanimous acts of charity, etc., one's Krishna consciousness will be distorted and weakened. Yes. The purport of verses chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, last paragraph. Is it? Yes. Okay, I don't have the page here. Because my book is different, I have third volume of 11th canto, not the big one. Yes, so if we think we can get Krishna by studying Sanskrit, and I even heard somebody say in one class, not here, it was actually, the person was in our temple, but not in the temple room, like giving a class somewhere, Gurukula or somewhere. And that one's, and he was saying that unless you know Sanskrit, you can't go back to Godhead. Because he knew Sanskrit very nicely. Yeah, so what about Bhajagovinda, 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 Murabhate? All of these things will not help you at the time of death. I won't mention any names. But he's no longer with us. He started his own movement after that. I mean, yeah. He was, and we have many who are ISKCON devotees, and then they go and start their own movements. So this was one example. Here it says right in Bhagavatam, it's not by Sanskrit that you can control Krishna. The gopis didn't know all these Sanskrit terms. One should remember the example of Lord Chaitanya, who practiced Krishna consciousness by constantly hearing and chanting about Lord Krishna. If by fasting, study, austerity, or sacrifice one becomes more fit to participate in the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, then such activities are also pleasing to Lord Krishna. The Lord clearly explains here that such activities can never become central in the practice of Bhakti Yoga. They must remain in an auxiliary relationship to the supreme process of satsanga, or association with pure devotees who hear and chant the glories of the Lord. Srimadvacharya has quoted from Vedic literature that if one offends the Lord's devotees and does not learn to associate with them, Lord Vishnu personally places barriers in the path of such a person so he may not enter into the Lord's company. So be careful, don't offend the devotees, or else Krishna himself will put barriers in your path. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says something here about this verse, 1 and 2, if I can find it. Yes. The word Rodhayati in this verse is singular, indicating it should be applied separately to each of the processes described. Okay, let's see. No. 3 to 4. Quote. Actually, the quote. The Lord says, activities like yoga cannot control me. I am not controlled by Ashtanga yogis. They cannot attain my shelter. This is the purport of this verse. Then here he quotes Krishna. The Lord said, O Uddhava, the study of Sankhya and following of religious principles also cannot control me. Study of the Vedas, performance of austerity, and life of renunciation do not enable one to attain my shelter. Powerful process of devotional service is the only method of controlling me and pleasing me. It is an established fact. I am attained only by devotional service and by no other means. One who simply associates with my pure devotees pleases me. So what can be said of one who renders devotional service to me in the association of devotees? One advances on the path of devotional service in the association of devotees. So this is the purport of this, is to associate with devotees by all means, whatever you're doing. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says, the Supreme Lord is unconquerable, but he's controlled by the love of his pure devotees. All methods for achieving the ultimate goal of life followed by non-devotees cannot purchase the favor of the Supreme Lord. So that is the... And this Satyaraj says, Krishna again explains the open secret of spiritual perfection, association with advanced devotees. Whatever else one might do in an attempt to win this heart or to make progress in the spiritual path, nothing is as effective as associating and serving those who are dear to him. There is a verse in third canto when the four Kumaras met the Lord Vaikuntha, and he says something about my pure devotees. Huh? I get the dust of their feet, that's why I'm famous, and that's how I can purify the universes. And he also said, the pure devotees are dear to me, and even the devotee, or maybe this is ninth canto, devotee of the devotee is also dear to me. I can't remember which canto it is. He says, even the devotees of my devotees, they are very dear to me. Okay, so we'll read verse 3 to 6. We're going to hear a lot of names here of different kinds of people who got perfection by association with devotees. In every yuga, many living entities entangled in the modes of passion and ignorance gained the association of my devotees. So this is very hopeful for us who might be entangled in the modes. Thus, such living entities as the daityas, rakshasas, birds, beasts, gandharvas, apsaras, nagas, siddhas, charanas, guhyakas, and vidyadharas, as well as such lower class human beings as vaishyas, shudras, women, and others, were able to achieve my supreme abode. Vritrasura, Prahlad Maharaj, and others like them also achieved my abode by association with my devotees, as did personalities such as Vrishaparva, Bali Maharaj, Banasura, Maya, Vibhishana, Sugriva, Hanuman, Jambavan, Gajendra, Jatayu, Tuladhar, Dharmavyada, Kubja, the gopis in Vrindavan, and the wives of the brahmanas who were performing sacrifice. And it's all by association. We'll find out. We'll find out who he is. So, purport. The Lord has mentioned devotees such as the gopis in Vrindavan and also demons like Banasura to illustrate how he comes under the control of those who surrender to him. It is understood devotees like the gopis and others mentioned here obtain pure love of Krishna, whereas the demons generally obtained only salvation. Many demons were purified by association with devotees and came to accept devotional service to the Lord is the most important among the various activities in their lives, but exalted devotees like Prahlad and Bali Maharaj know nothing except devotional service, which they accept as their very life. Still, the reformed demons are also mentioned, so the readers of Srimad Bhagavatam will understand the enormous benefits one may achieve by associating with devotees of the Lord. So at this point, don't look at your computers and don't look at your books. So I'm going to ask you, instead of reading it, to see if you remember or you might know who associated with who in God perfection. So first of all, we have Vritrasura. Who did Vritrasura associate with? Narada and Angira. Very good. Raise your hand, please. Angira as Chitraketu. In his previous life, he was Chitraketu. Okay, next one is Prahlad Maharaj. Adipurush. Narada Muni. When did he get Narada Muni's association? In the womb of his mother. Very good. By sound vibration. Vrishaparva. Now we'll find out. If you read the purport, you'll find out many things. Nobody knows Vrishaparva. He was a demon, abandoned by his mother at birth, but raised by a Muni and became a devotee of Lord Krishna. Next, Balya Maharaj. Who did he associate with? Yes?
Prahlad.
Prahlad Maharaj. And also with? Vamana. Raise your hand. I know you can answer every one of the questions, but let's give other people a chance too. Thank you. Vamana Dev. Okay. Banasura. Yes. Shiva and? Aniruddha? And who else? He's not mentioned, of course. Kalpit?
The father?
His father? No. Bali? Oh, yes. Yes. That was already there. Bali Maharaj, his father. And one more. No, Banasura is the son of Bali Maharaj. So he associated with his father. Lord Krishna. Krishna cut off his all but four arms. And so, yes, he associated with Krishna. Okay. Understanding the glories of...
His daughter married...
Yeah. Aniruddha. Yeah, so he got in the family of Krishna by marriage. Yeah. Well, it was Lord Shiva and Krishna who actually made him a devotee. Krishna by cutting his arms off. Understanding the glories of Lord Krishna, Banasura also became a great devotee. So I guess he understood, you know, after he got his arms cut off by Lord Krishna, that he's God. Yeah.
And he didn't kill him, right?
No, he didn't kill. He kept him alive because he's in the he promised not to kill anyone in Prahlad's family. Yes.
So it's interesting that he associated with Lord Shiva even before, but not in his Lord Shiva's capacity as a devotee. So he
right. Yes. Yeah, he didn't become a devotee before he met Lord Krishna, but when he saw how Lord Shiva was praying to Krishna, then he realized, oh yes, became a devotee. Next one, Maya Danava. Yes?
Arjuna.
Krishna. The Pandavas and Krishna. Okay, thank you. Vibhishana. Yes?
It says Hanuman.
Hanuman. Yeah. Hanuman and Ram. Lord Ram. Okay. What was that?
Sita.
Yeah, he associated. Yes. Well, not really. Not really. He didn't associate with Sita. It's not mentioned. That was Hanuman.
He actually got the blessing from Lord Brahma after their austerity.
Vibhishana got the blessing from Lord Brahma.
For their blessings.
Yes.
He
asked for pure bhakti. Very good. Yeah.
When was that?
Well, they were all doing austerities. When Hiranyakashipu was doing, then also Kumbhakarna and also Vibhishana, they were all doing together. And Vibhishana asked for bhakti, pure bhakti. Kumbhakarna asked for sleep. Nobody will wake him up. But that was a slip of his tongue. And Saraswati entered his mouth and made him say that. So let's see who else we have. Yes. Okay, animals. One animal. Who became a devotee? Yes. Hanuman. Who else? Gajendra. Jambavan. Jatayu. Okay. Jambavan, associated with? Krishna. Yes. And Gajendra, it doesn't say who, just devotees. Yeah, Jambavan was an associate of Ram. Now, Gajendra had a... I forgot. Yeah, some muni cursed him. Gajendra, in his previous life. He was a king, yeah. Okay, who did Jatayu associate with? He met Sita. He didn't associate with her. He met Sita, he met Ram, but he had two, Dasharath and somebody else that Jatayu associated with. Just think. Yes, Garuda. Because he's also a bird, and he's a pure devotee bird. Yes. Yeah, no. Yeah, he's a bird, vulture bird. Yeah. Okay. Jiva Goswami. Okay. Okay, that's it. According to Jiva Goswami, association Gandharvas, Apsaras, Nagas, Siddhas, Charanas, Guyakas, and Vidyadharas had with devotees is not very prominent and does not need to be mentioned. Vanikpatas of Aisha, his story is mentioned in Mahabharata in connection with the pride of Jajali Muni. Then we have Dharma Vyadha, the non-violent hunter. In the previous life, he somehow became a Brahma Rakshasa, or Brahmana ghost, but was eventually saved. In a previous Kali Yuga, he had the association of a Vaishnava king named Vasu. Kubja associated directly with Lord Krishna. In her previous birth, she had associated with Narada Muni. In that story, I don't know. Kubja in her previous birth. Probably in Garga Samhita. The gopis of Vrindavan rendered service to saintly persons in their previous births. Of course, there were many different gopis, so could be anybody. Having had ample association with devotees, they became gopis in Vrindavan in their next lives and associated with the eternally liberated gopis who had descended there. They also had association with Tosi Devi, Vrinda Devi. Who did the wives of the Brahmins have association with? No.
Those who were selling betel?
The fruit ladies. The flower garlands and fruit betel nut ladies. And they told them about Krishna. They heard about Krishna from them. Okay. Yes, you have a question. Huh? Pulindas. Pulindis, right. That's what the Pulindis. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, simply by the influence of devotees' association, all of one's incompetence is destroyed, so one became qualified to attain the service of the personality of Godhead. So verse 7, persons I've mentioned did not undergo serious studies of the Vedic literature, nor did they worship great saintly persons, nor did they execute severe vows or austerities. Simply by association with me and my devotees, they achieve me. So what does this mean here? Purport, study of the Vedic literature, worship of those who teach the Shruti mantras. So these are the great saintly persons, like sages. They didn't worship the sages. Acceptance of vows and austerities are helpful processes that please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they are secondary to the essential process of associating with the Lord and his pure devotees. Okay. So in the last end of the purport, Sridhar Swami mentions a pure devotee can advance to Krishna consciousness by his own association, since simply by associating with his own activities and consciousness, he associates with the Lord. So that's nice. That's why sannyasis can be alone if they're devotees. If they're devotees, then they can be alone, because they just associate with Paramatma and all their Krishna conscious thoughts in their mind and their consciousness. So we should all become like that, that our mind is good association for us. Verse 8, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, including the gopis, cows, and moving creatures such as twin Arjuna trees, animals, living entities, with stunted consciousness such as bushes and thickets, and snakes such as Kaliya, all achieve the perfection of life by unalloyed love for me, and thus very easily attained me. Okay. So we just go down to the quote where Krishna speaks in 10.15.5 in the purport. Aho amideva varam arachitam param bhujam te sumana falarhanam namantipadaya shikabiratmanas tamo bahatyai charujam mayakitam. My dear brother Baladev, just see how these trees are bowing down with their branches and offering obeisances to your lotus feet, which are worshipable even by the demigods. Indeed, my dear brother, you are the supreme god, and thus these trees have produced fruits and flowers as an offering to you. Although a living entity takes birth as a tree due to the mode of ignorance, certainly by such a birth in Vrindavan, these trees are destroying all darkness in their lives by serving your lotus feet. Okay, question time. Don't look at your books and your computers. We'll see who read the purport. Or somebody may already know these things. So the gopis were in which rasa? Raise your hand. Yes? Madhurya. Good. The cows were in which rasa? Adipurush? Vatsaya. Unmoving objects like Govardhan Hill and other hills and mountains were in which rasa? Yes? No. No. Sakyaras, they were friends. The mountains, the hills, were in Sakyaras. They loved him as a friend. Okay, raise your hand. The ordinary animals, trees, and bushes. Yes? Dasyaras. Trees, bushes, and ordinary animals like birds. They're in Dasyaras. Okay, snakes like Kaliya. Which rasa was Kaliya in? After he became a devotee. Yes? Dasyaras. He also became servant. Who can tell me example of after this Leela, then Kaliya served Lord Krishna, yes?
He was serving a boat, like a speedboat.
He was a speedboat. See? Everything starts with Krishna. Even speedboats start with Krishna. The first original speedboat was Kaliya. What else? How else did he serve Krishna? Yeah, I mean after. Yeah, maybe he did again. I don't know. Maybe he danced again. I don't know about that. But yeah.
He told Krishna again, whenever you need, I will come.
I know that, but when did he come again and serve Krishna as a servant, as a carrier? Yes? Bring Krishna to Mathura. Okay, and also, yes, to bring Krishna to Mathura. Instead of Akrura, Kaliya took him one time. Yes, so we hear. There's somewhere about Nisringa, too. Nisringa Leela. I heard, that Nisringa came on Kaliya. Anyway, Jagatak Maharaj tells these strange stories.
Different Puranas.
Yeah, they come in Kaliya sometimes. Brihabhagavatamrita? Okay. Where is that? That's going to Mathura on Kaliya? Okay. Brihabhagavatamrita.
Also Arishtasura sometimes.
Arishtasura, oh yeah. He's the bull. He plays with him. And the horse he plays with too sometimes, yeah. The Keshi demon. Okay. So, snakes like Kaliya developed this love and servitude, and after relishing their loving service to Lord Krishna, all of them went back home, back to Godhead. According to Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, all those inhabitants of Vrindavan should be considered eternally liberated souls, as expressed by the word siddha, which means having achieved perfection of life. Verse 9, even though one engages with great endeavor in the mystic yoga system, philosophical speculation, charity, vows, penances, ritualistic sacrifices, teaching of Vedic mantras to others, personal study of the Vedas or renounced order of life, still one cannot achieve me. Wow. So how can we achieve you? Verse 10. We'll sing the Sanskrit. Ramena saram mataram panite shvavakina mayanurakta chitaha vikatta bhavena namevi yoga Tivradhayonyam Tadishu Sukhaya. Residents of Vrindavan, headed by the gopis, were always completely attached to me with deepest love. Therefore, when my uncle Akura brought my brother, Balaram, and me to the city of Mathura, the residents of Vrindavan suffered extreme mental distress because of separation from me, could not find any other source of happiness. So now Krishna comes to the highest love, the love of the gopis. Nothing else can really satisfy him except the Brijbasis, headed by the gopis. So in the purport, it explains that in the 10th canto, Lord Krishna's uncle Akura came to Vrindavan and took Krishna and Balaram back to Mathura for a wrestling event. The gopis loved Krishna so much that in his absence, their consciousness was completely absorbed in spiritual love. So their Krishna consciousness is considered the highest perfectional stage. They were always expecting Lord Krishna would finish his business of killing demons and return to them. Therefore, their anxiety was an extremely moving, heart-rending display of love. Anyone desiring true happiness must take to devotional service of the Lord in the spirit of the gopis, giving up everything for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the past tense is used. They did not see anything except me for happiness. This suggests their suffering ended. After killing Dantavakra, Krishna came back to the gopis. So they are not suffering now, but Krishna has actually come back since this time. So in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, this verse is quoted. If I can find it, oh, it's upside down. I wonder. Yeah. This verse is quoted. So this is discussing this association of devotees as the highest thing. So when Krishna was talking about association, here it says, then he remembered the gopis. He remembered his association with the gopis. And here it says, Krishna didn't want to go to Mathura, but Akura used his wits to convince Vasudev and Balaram that going to Mathura was unavoidable. And here, by referring to Akura as a noble son of Shafalka in this verse, he's telling Uddhava, the Brijbasis, including Krishna, have to excuse Akura. It wasn't his fault. He was just doing what he thought necessary to protect the dynasty. That's all. From the wrath of Kamsa. And Balaram could have pacified the Brijbasis, but he didn't. He gave his consent for Krishna to go to Mathura. And he said if Balaram hadn't given his consent, Krishna would not have gone, perhaps, to Mathura. And the gopis, after Krishna left, couldn't find anything for their eyes to see. Whatever they saw, they thought, oh, this reminds us that Krishna is gone. It made him more miserable. And here it says, separation from Krishna was like a persistent throbbing in the head that made enjoying anything in life impossible. So if you ever had a headache, persistent throbbing in the head, that's how the gopis felt after Krishna left. You can't enjoy anything. You just want to lie down and forget the world. Close the curtains, make sure there's no sound, and just forget everything. So that's how they felt, this persistent throbbing in the head. Even before Krishna left, the gopis' attraction to him had been obsessive, but now it was utterly out of control, and it tormented them like a raging fever in the brain. So Uddhava might wonder why the gopis, whose wisdom is praised by the most learned sages, continued to be attracted to Krishna, even after he had caused them so much anguish. Krishna's answer is the gopis' love for him was so extremely intense that nothing, even his mistreatment of them, could impede it. So this is this verse, explanation of this verse. Then he, in the purport, it says the word gopi can be understood to be derived from ga panti. They protect their senses. And what that means, the gopis protected their senses by keeping them away from material objects. In truth, they were the greatest of self-controlled yogis. But Krishna's charm so entranced them, they became entangled in loving affairs with him and therefore suffered. So although they were so self-controlled, still they fell down with Krishna. Krishna got them. And ruined all their, just like a bee, he took them and ruined all their honey. He stole everything they had. And Krishna here confesses in this verse to Uddhava, it is simply his nature to attract all sorts of people, exploit them for his own pleasure, enjoy them to his full, then go away and leave them miserable. And the gopis talk about that quality of Krishna, how he just comes, enjoys, and leaves. And we become miserable and cry our whole lives. But Krishna also suffered in separation from the gopis. And this he will also later on describe. So we will go to the next verse. That's 7 of the part 2, 7 verses 140. That's verse 143. And all of the four verses are quoted in here. 43, 4, 5, and 6. So verse 11. No, verse 12. Verse 11. Tastak shapa presta tame nanita mayaiva vindavana gocharena shanartavatta punarangatasam hina mayakepa sama abhuvu. Dear Uddhava, all of those nights the gopis spent with me, their most dearly beloved, in the land of Vrindavan, seemed to them to pass in less than a moment. Bereft of my association, however, the gopis felt that those same nights dragged on forever, as if each night were equal to a day of Brahma. So Prabhupada, Shridhara Swami comments as follows. The gopis suffered extreme anxiety in the absence of Lord Krishna. Though outwardly appearing bewildered, they actually achieved the highest perfectional stage of samadhi. Their consciousness was intensely and intimately attached to Lord Krishna, and by such Krishna consciousness, their own bodies seemed very far away from them, even though people normally consider their body to be their closest possession. In fact, the gopis did not think about their own existence. Although a young woman normally considers her husband and children to be her dearmost possessions, the gopis did not even consider the existence of their so-called families, nor could they think of this world or life after death. Indeed, they were not at all aware of these things. Just like great sages who become detached from the names and forms of the material world, the gopis could not think of anything because they were wrapped in loving remembrance of Lord Krishna. Just as rivers enter the ocean, similarly the gopis completely merged into consciousness of Lord Krishna through intense love. So we heard a little bit of similar thing when Krishna left the gopis in the Rasa dance, but now it's much more. And Krishna is remembering the gopis here. And he's acknowledging now the terrible agony that they're enduring just for him. And here now the comment of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita verse. He addresses Uddhava as Anga to indicate Uddhava is as dear to him as his own body. And then he said that he describes how the Rasa-lila, although it actually lasted for a nighttime of Brahma, for the gopis it was like just a second. That it was a nighttime of Brahma that they were dancing with Krishna, but for them it was just like a moment or a second. Many days, many nights. But not other nights. When Krishna was not with them, then the night was like a night of Brahma, they felt. So it was like this time. Time is when you're enjoying something, and the time goes very fast, and you think, oh, why did it end? And when you're suffering, you think, how long is this going to take? How long will I have to suffer? So this is how this time change here, how they are perceiving time is so different. So then, in this commentary here, Krishna admits the gopis' great love for him has cast them into utter misery. This thought might prompt a friend to suggest, Krishna, why don't you just bring the gopis to Dwarka and make them happy? But Krishna said, no, the Rasa-lila was a source of delight because it was in Vrindavan. We were together in Vrindavan, so we can't feel that anywhere else. And that's the Rathyatra, that they're bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. Only in Vrindavan does Krishna wander among his cows and dress himself as a cowherd boy. And only in the atmosphere of Vrindavan is the highest ecstasy perceived. Unfortunately, Krishna confesses he's no longer the same person as in Vrindavan. He's become ungrateful and hard-hearted. But the gopis they have not degraded at all in their virtues. So they're much more, Krishna is considering the gopis more exalted than himself. And that's why he's praising them here. So verse 12. Tana vidanmaya mai anusangabhata dhiya samatmanam madastatedam etasamadha munayoptitoye nadya pravishta ivanamarupe. My dear Uddhava, just as great sages in yoga trance merge into self-realization like rivers merging into the ocean and are thus not aware of material names and forms, similarly the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me within their minds they could not think of their own bodies or of this world or of their future lives. Their entire consciousness was simply bound up in me. So this sounds like the last purport we read. It's just, he was saying all these same things. And in the purport, it says, the words swam atmanam adastatetam indicate, well, for ordinary persons, one's personal body is the most dear and near thing. The gopis considered their own bodies to be distant and remote, just as a yogi in samadhi trance considers ordinary things around his physical body or his physical body itself to be most remote. So imagine that your body seems far away. Can you imagine how that can be? Only when you're sleeping at night, but this is in daytime when they're awake. So this is samadhi. Your body is not, you're not connected with your body. You lose the connection. When Krishna played on his flute late at night, the gopis immediately forgot everything about their so-called husbands and children and went to dance with Lord Krishna in the forest. So this is explained by Prabhupada in his Krishna book. The basic explanation is Lord Krishna is the source of everything. Gopis are the Lord's own potency, so there's no discrepancy or immorality in the almighty personality of Godhead's loving affairs with his own manifest potency, the gopis, who happen to be the most beautiful young girls in the creation of God. I just got something on the internet. In Poland, the one Christian nun took the devotees to court. Did you get that in the internet? One nun, and she claimed that Krishna is immoral because he married 16,108 wives. So she took the devotees to court. And so the devotee cross-examined the nun, and he asked, "So, what is your vow that you have taken?" And she said, "Yes, I have vowed that I am married to Jesus."
First, she wouldn't say it at all, and then they made some.
They read the vow out that she's married to Jesus, and he said, "How many nuns are married to Jesus?" Millions. So, case dismissed. So really, who can criticize Krishna? He only had 16,108. That wasn't that much. Now remember, when I was a new devotee, and I heard that story for the first time, Krishna had 16,108 wives. I said, only? And that's my reaction. I said, why only 16,000? I mean, he's God, you know. He can have so many. Yeah. So anyway, I was thinking, you know, why only 16,000? That's a fact. And he had billions. He married, according to Gopal Champu, he married 10 billion or million gopis or something. According to Jiva Goswami, I think it was 10 billion or 10 million. I don't know. Some huge number. I mean, 3 billion? In the Rasa dance. Well, was the marriage after the end of Gopal Champu was 3 billion. Okay, now I think it was more like 10. Anyway, whatever. It was, I mean, he can have. He's Krishna. Yes. There is no illusion on the part of the gopis, for they are so attracted to Lord Krishna, they do not care to think of anything else. Since all existence is situated within the body of Lord Krishna, there is no loss for the gopis when they concentrate on the Lord. Yes, people may criticize. Why only Krishna? Why only you focus on Krishna? Why everything is Krishna? Because everything is Krishna. It is a nature of very deep love to exclude all objects except the beloved. Okay, then it goes on about love. Last paragraph. One should understand the gopis are not in any way inclined toward impersonal meditation, in which one denies the reality of variegated creation, because it talks about merging. They didn't merge into Krishna. They didn't deny anything. They simply loved Krishna and could not think of anything else. They only rejected whatever impeded their concentration on Lord Krishna, cursing even their own eyelids, which blinked and thus removed Krishna from their sight for a split second. Sri Rupa Goswami has stated, all sincere devotees of the Lord should have the courage to remove from their lives anything that impedes their progressive march back home, back to Godhead. So then Vishnu Chakravarti, I believe, has a comment. Yes, I forgot to put who it's from. Seeing a husband or sons, even without good qualities, gives more happiness than seeing the moon, which gives great bliss and destroys all suffering. The cause is possessiveness. So you might have a son or a husband that's not so great, but just you see them, then you feel so happy. One is more possessive of husband and sons than of the moon. Of course, how can we possess the moon? And what to speak of the bliss if one is unlimitedly possessive of Krishna, who gives unlimited bliss by his very nature and is decorated with all good qualities. This possessiveness is the cause of the greatest bliss for the devotees. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says something. It's not that they merged into Brahman, actually. Oh, here's a comment. Brahman is attached to the devotees and under their control, but Brahman is not attached to the sages and not under their control. Interesting comment. Okay, we'll read a little bit from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur from this verse 12, just a couple of sentences. Rivers enter the ocean, losing their separate identity. This is an example to illustrate how devotees become fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and thus relish the mellows of devotional service without any concern for their personal existence. So let's see what this commentator here says. The gopis are married women with husbands, children, and household responsibilities. How can they be considered superior to renounced, self-contented sages who have given up all material attachments? The gopis are the highest, higher than the sannyasis, higher than the sages. Here, Krishna answers this doubt. After sages who follow Ashtanga Yoga system become advanced in the practice of yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dhyana, and dharana, they realize the absolute truth is Lord Vishnu in their perfected trance or samadhi. In that perfect consciousness, they forget the temporary names and forms of the material world, including the names and forms of their own bodies. I even experienced that in under anesthesia, where you forget your body and your name and everything, your form. And I mean, even in anesthesia, you can do that. But that doesn't give you Krishna Prema, by my experience. You may forget your name, your form, and your body, but that doesn't give you love for Krishna. The gopis resemble such perfect sages, for the activities of the gopis' minds are all fixed on Krishna in a highly developed trance, achieved by virtue of their constant connection with Krishna, their natural relationship with him in pure love. So, okay. As rivers abandon themselves to the waves of the ocean, the gopis have merged their hearts in thought of Krishna. So this is how to understand the analogy of rivers into the ocean. The hearts of the gopis have merged in thought of Krishna. So here's an interesting comment. Even while standing in the midst of a blazing fire, the gopis are not burned. Rather, all their desires are fulfilled. Furthermore, simply by remaining always in Krishna consciousness, the gopis have gained the spiritual strength to easily turn away from everything material. Their hearts are irrevocably attracted to Krishna in all circumstances, whereas munis have to struggle hard to progress through the successive methods of Ashtanga Yoga. So yogis compared with the gopis. No comparison. The gopis are much greater because they easily achieve samadhi. That reminds me of Nectar of Devotion, where some gopi is complaining. It's a quote from Lalita Madhava. She's complaining to her friend to Purnamasi, that, you know, I just can't get Krishna out of my heart. I just can't stop thinking of Krishna. No matter what I do, he's just there in my mind, in my heart, everywhere. I can't stop it. And then Purnamasi, or the elder, says to her, you know, the yogis are trying to do this, and you're cursing, you're getting this so easily, and you're unhappy with this. So that was the gopis. That they couldn't get Krishna out of their mind, couldn't get Krishna out of their heart. So another difference between the yogis and the gopis, though the gopis forget everything material, including their own bodies, they never forget Krishna's names, forms, and qualities. And under anesthesia, I even forgot Krishna's names, forms, and qualities. I forgot everything, including my name and Krishna's name. So the gopis weren't like that. Yeah, Krishna was merciful. Krishna, I forgot. Well, I forgot, but then after a while, Krishna came. Yes, Krishna, yeah, that's true. I think, I forgot, but he didn't forget me. And Krishna actually came. Yeah. Some Bhrigu said that Prabhupada brought the name in there for me. Anyway, yes, if you surrender to Prabhupada, then Krishna will come, even if you forget everything. Yeah, right. Oh, that's true. I didn't forget the name. But I don't think it was my doing, because I was helpless. I was just like gone. So I think, it was Krishna remembered me, or Prabhupada remembered. Somebody remembered me. And then Krishna's name. Yes, Krishna's name was there. So I understood there's no void anywhere. Even under anesthesia, Krishna is there. Yes. Okay. So let's hear about the gopis. Here a doubt may arise. Oh, because he quotes from 9th canto, where Narayana talks to Durvasa, without saintly persons, for whom I'm the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss or even association of my consort, Sri, the Supreme Goddess of Fortune. So here a doubt may arise. The gopis of Vrindavan are also said to be goddesses of fortune. Doesn't that put them in the same category as Sri? How then can they be considered Krishna's dearmost devotees? Krishna dispels this doubt here in his discussion with Uddhava in 11th canto by disclosing a confidential aspect of the gopis' glories, an aspect that establishes the gopis beyond all doubt as the greatest of saints and greater even than the goddess Sri. Earlier in 10th canto, while giving Uddhava the message to convey to the gopis, Krishna glorified them. But at that time, Krishna did not reveal he himself was distressed by being separated from them. Had he done so, Uddhava might have told this to the gopis and their condition would only have worsened. But now in 11th canto, Krishna wishes to refute the popular misconception that he is hard-hearted, and he wishes to satisfy Uddhava, so revealing the greatness of his own ecstasy, he discloses his feelings for the gopis. In so doing, he describes how it is the gopis are more saintly than everyone else. So, he's saying, sages are not really sages if in their samadhi they become like rivers flowing into the ocean and forget my names and forms. Because the activities of their senses completely stop, such forgetful sages become as if dead, for they are devoid of the living soul's defining quality of thought and are unable to experience transcendental ecstasy. In the same way, were I ever to forget my gopis, were I ever to fail to think of them constantly, I would no longer be Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. This is from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I believe it's Sanatan Goswami. Now, then he says something even more radical than that. If I don't think of the gopis, then I'm not Krishna. Now, what can be more radical than that? Then, if I don't think of them, my life would come to an end. I would no longer exist. So Krishna has no life unless he thinks of the gopis. Very heavy statement by Lord Krishna. Krishna refrains from openly speaking this last thought because he wants to spare Uddhava the pain of hearing something so distasteful. Krishna, divulging why he feels the way he does, says to Uddhava, I am obliged to the gopis because their minds are absolutely fixed on me. The gopis always think exclusively of me, and their attraction to me is most sublime. Therefore, dear brother, for them I have the greatest love. I must confess to not having the same kind of love for anything or anyone else. Not for my parents, my brothers, my queens, my children, not for my own body, nor for my Vaikuntha abode with all its paraphernalia and associates, nor my special abodes here in Dwarka and Mathura. All of them I could forget and still be myself, Shri Krishna, and not feel as much pain as if I were ever to forget the gopis of Raj. I'm always thinking of the gopis with supreme love and attachment. And this is Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The commentary is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, or it's Sanatana Goswami. I don't know actually. Who is the commentator on this? Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami, yeah. He wrote it and he commented on it. Okay. The 1-7, that's 2-7-145, means part 2, volume 3. Volume 3, 7-145. So the gopis have surpassed the yogis because the gopis are the object of Krishna's meditation. Therefore, they're greater than anyone else. So it's not just that they are the greatest, but Krishna is thinking of them always. And he says, if I don't think of them, then I'm not Krishna. I cannot exist. Yeah?
This verse also is a direct refutation of Mayavada.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is one very famous shloka from Shankaracharya quoted by Shijiva. There are five things characterizing everything. This is, it exists, it is conceivable, and it is pleasant. So Satchidananda.
Exists, conceivable, and pleasant. Known.
And it also has name and form.
Name and form.
So it says the first three are, they belong to Brahman, and the last two, Namarupa, they belong only to Jagat. But here we see that this Namarupa is mentioned.
Yes.
So what the sages are achieving, they forget about material Namarupa.
Yeah.
They forget about Krishna's Namarupa. So
right.
It refutes the Shankaracharya.
Yeah, this refutes Shankaracharya's, this verse. Very good. Namarupa, yes, because they remembered Krishna's name and forms. They forgot everything, but not Krishna's name and form. Okay, verse 13. Matkama ramanam jaram asvarupa vidobala brahmamam paramam prapu sangashata sahasasha. All those hundreds of thousands of gopis, understanding me to be their most charming lover and ardently desiring me in that way, were unaware of my actual position. Yet, by intimately associating with me, the gopis attained me, supreme absolute truth. Purport. The words asvarupa, vida, not understanding my actual position or form, indicate the lovely gopis were so completely absorbed in conjugal love for Krishna, they were not aware of the Lord's unlimited potencies as the supreme personality of Godhead. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains this and other meanings of the words asvarupa vida. So it's not they forgot the form, but they forgot that he was God. Because swarupa means form also, asvarupa. So you can get confused here. In Sanskrit, the word vid also means to acquire. Thus, asvarupa vida indicates the gopis, like other pure devotees of the Lord, were not interested in achieving sarupya mukti, the liberation of acquiring a bodily form similar to the Lord's. So they weren't, because were the gopis to attain a bodily form like the Lord's, how could the Lord execute his conjugal pastime of dancing with the gopis and embracing them? And so they didn't want this sarupya mukti, because otherwise then they couldn't be his lovers. Since the gopis had realized their eternal spiritual forms as servitors of the Lord, the word swarup may also mean indicate their own spiritual bodies. Thus, asvarupa vida means the gopis never thought as materialists do of their own bodily beauty. Although the gopis are the most beautiful girls in the Lord's creation, they never thought of their own bodies, but rather were always meditating on the transcendental body of Lord Krishna. Although we cannot imitate the gopis' exalted conjugal feelings, we can follow their superb example of practical Krishna consciousness. They naturally took shelter of Lord Krishna and achieved the highest perfection of life. So again, this verse is quoted, and we had Bhagavatamrita, and that was verse 12. All those hundreds understanding me to be their most charming lover. And this is page Okay. So here, oh, now it talks about the Pulindis here. The gopis fulfilled their highest ambitions by achieving Krishna as their lover. Those cowherd women were so exalted that by personal contact with them, thousands of the outcast women of Braj, Pulindis, and other aborigines achieved the same rarest goal of life. The word abala, women, in its literal sense means not strong, indicating the aborigine women lacked the assets of knowledge, good birth, good behavior, and devotion to God. They were ignorant of their own eternal identities as spirit souls, and because they had never come close enough to Nanda Maharaj's village to see Krishna with their own eyes, they were also ignorant of Krishna's all-attractive beauty. Nonetheless, in the forest, the aborigine women of Braj accidentally came in contact with grass and leaves smeared with kumkum from the bodies of the gopis, and in this way gained the transcendental association of the gopis and also became infected with the desire to have Krishna as their lover. So they didn't see Krishna, they didn't see the gopis, they just got the kumkum. That was their association that made them into Madhurya Ras. Or if we presume that the Pulindis and other aborigine women, simply by being born in Krishna's holy dham, must have known that they were eternal souls, their association with the gopis, even though indirect, infused them with sublime devotion for Krishna and made them forget whatever spiritual knowledge they had. So maybe they were self-realized in some sense, but they didn't. But then they became Krishna conscious. They got love of Krishna by getting the kumkum. They were also ignorant of who they were in another sense, taking no heed of their own dirtiness, their dingy complexions. They were helplessly impelled toward Krishna by the conjugal attraction they contracted from the gopis. The Pulindis and others may have been low-class tribal women, but they had the greatest fortune of being attracted to the Supreme Absolute Truth, the darling son of Nanda Maharaj, and that attraction was extraordinary. They accepted him as the absolute master of their lives, and that too in the special mood that he was their unmarried lover. So they were in the same Parikya Ras. They had to keep their love for Krishna secret, because as outcasts, they had little hope of ever meeting him, and if they did chance to meet him, that contact would be considered altogether illicit. Thus, they privately cherished the treasure of prema within the cores of their hearts. At every moment, they tasted newer and newer sweetness and the highest possible limits of blissful satisfaction. Having had some contact with the gopis, the aborigine women of Braj all attained a perfection similar to theirs, if not in this life, then in the next. So,
what were they in the previous lives?
They were aborigines. We read in Garga Samhita, they were aborigines in Ram Lila.
Ram.
Yeah, and they got attracted to Ram, according to that. And then they were born as gopis. So one more comment, one last comment, by Satyaraj. Krishna is making explicit that which remained only implicit in chapter 5, verse 33, that knowledge of him is not required to develop love for him. He reveals who he has in mind, the gopis of Braj, the embodiment of love that transcends knowledge. Whatever helps one to increase his love for God is good. For some, knowledge is an advantage. For others, it is an obstacle. So, any questions or comments on these 13 verses of this chapter? Parvati? Okay, Parvati is concerned about the comment by Sridhar Swami that you can associate, if you're advanced, you can just associate with yourself. And all this comments on how the glories of association with devotees, here's one that, yes.
But this is a if you recognize somebody who is pure.
Yeah.
Devotee.
So an example is Prabhupada. We cannot imitate.
Bhaktisiddhanta.
Sri Bhaktisiddhanta. Yes? Oh. Okay, you go ahead.
It's in the same.
Okay.
I had Brahman initiation in my
room. What was I didn't catch it. Vaishnava K, okay? Vaishnava Bhakti Siddhanta. He warns. We should not go to Nirjan Bhajan prematurely. Okay? Yes, and Prabhupada also. Right. That's true. Madhyamadikari knows how to be friendly and associate with equals, whereas a Kanishtha will be So we have, yeah.
That's why you get some.
Yeah, 60%, okay, 20% association with your juniors, 20% with seniors, and 60% with your equals. And if you can't find anyone equal to you, you're in trouble. To associate with. Radhanath Maharaj. You can't find anyone who is your equal, then that means, what does that mean? Yeah. You're thinking either everyone's your junior or everyone's your senior. Either, yeah. Yes, yes, friends. It's a principle of the Guru seminar. There were 12 principles. One is to have association with peers, peer association. It's very important. And we see what happens if it's lacking, then it can be a problem. If your only association is with your juniors, then you'll get some idea of yourself. And if and yeah, yeah, right. And if your only association is with your seniors, then you're in your best behavior usually. But with equals, it's different. Or else you might just think, well, you know, I just want to associate with the highest. There are people that say, I can only, so you know, I only can associate with the highest. Yeah, Leela Madhuri. Yeah, you just, well, it's, you know, age, initiation, guru, and then, you know, there's like different things. You can see also your past, and what service you're doing. What service you're doing is also an indication. Yeah. How can we associate with equals without committing offenses? Because after 10 minutes, how can we deepen our relationship and be respectful? So that's dadati patigriyanati guhyam akhyati prichati. So we inquire confidentially and we reveal our mind to our equals. And they can actually help us. Well, what do you think? Okay, this is what I've been doing. This is my service, and this is how I see it. What do you think? We can often get help from our equals. You think I'm going the right direction or this service? And you know, yes. Kanishas are not recommended to associate with each other. Nectar of instruction. What happens if you're a Kanishta then? Yeah, but there are levels of Kanishtas. There are levels also. There are pure devotee Kanishtas, actually. And Prabhupada talks about pure devotee Kanishtas also. Depends on your. You can be a neophyte but have no motive. You can be a beginner but have no motive. Also, so then you may be a Kanishta, but if your motive is, I mean, there's different kinds of Kanishtas, and some are without. They may not know any philosophy, or they may just be beginning, but because they have no motive, then Prabhupada puts them in the category of pure devotee. What? Different levels. Yeah, Madhurya Kadambini may be there also.
What did
different levels of Kanishtas.
Yeah, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioned the knowledge.
Yeah, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you can check his books. He talks about that, different levels of Kanishta Madhyama, three levels of each. There's three levels of Kanishta, three levels of. The highest level of Kanishta preaches also. He's a preacher. I hope not. I hope the devotees, we don't have Kanishtas like that.
Whatever happened to the old guy who brought the first roll of toilet paper?
Okay, any other question? Yes? Yes, yes. It has to do with his previous life, generally. Then the Kanishta. We see some people, they just, you know, immediately, you know, they see the devotees, like, and they just join. They just follow the devotees home. They don't go back home. They just follow the devotees into the temple. So these people are not ordinary people. They just leave everything and just follow the devotees. That was Indra, yeah. He just heard the Harinam and then he followed the devotee and he wouldn't even go back for his shoe, one shoe that he was running. This one devotee told me, Mataji, what's her name? Padma Malini, my god sister. They were doing Harinam and then this person just started following them. And he was running so fast, he lost one of his shoes. And the devotee said, go and get your shoe. He said, no, I'm not getting my shoe. So this is some indication that a person has some connection from previous life. He wasn't allowed to stay there, but he was sleeping in the... Yeah, there's devotees, they just... Oh, and then they just, that's it. They just join the temple. It's like, yeah, something, some previous life. It may take you also some time, like a few months or a year, and still, it must be some previous. I mean, it does help. It does help. Yeah, any other questions? Okay, so we'll stop here.